Hello, my name is Audie Anker, and today I will be speaking with Francesco Bianchi about his journal article, The Great Depression and the Great Recession, A View from Financial Markets.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. So nice to meet you.
Meet you too. Thank you for joining me on this call. I really appreciate it.
No, of course.
So first, I was just wondering whether you could talk a bit more generally about your research and the article that you wrote.
Okay, so my original research interests are mostly in monetary economics. So that means like the central banks behave, how that impacts macroeconomic dynamics. And then from there, I developed an interest in finance, so the relation between what the central bank does and what that implies for asset prices. So this paper that you looked at, on the Great Depression and the Great Recession, has some of these elements. And then more in general, across all these different research interests I have, I'm mostly an applied macroeconomist. So what that means is that most of my work is based on some data work, or there is always going to be, even when it's more theoretical, there is always going to be a motivation based on the data.
Right. Okay. Well, since you started talking about data, my first question actually is about some of the tools you use to describe data and to investigate some of the data. And you mentioned the MSVAR, the Markov switching vector autoregression. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that and how you use that to investigate some of the financial markets in both the recession and the depression.
Okay, so let's start with something very basic. So vector autoregression is a way to characterize from a statistical point of view the relation between some variables of interest, no? So essentially it's a multivariate, because it involves more than one variable, time series model, okay? So what the Markov switching version of that model does, it allows for the possibility that the relation between the variables of interest is now stable over time. So in particular, when it comes to think about financial crisis, it's very convenient because it can easily adjust to the idea that during financial crisis, maybe the variables of interest might commove in a different way. And so that's why I use it in that particular paper. And in general, it can be used both to allow for the possibility that the size of the shocks is bigger than usual, and also that for the possibility that the propagation of these shocks is different than usual. There are other ways to model parameter instability, to model the idea that these dynamic relations are not stable over time. But the nice thing about Markov switching VR is that it allows for jumps, for discrete changes in these dynamics.
Okay. And so when looking at data like that, how do you figure out like a negative correlation between two variables? Like you mentioned that shocks to the stock market returns and the value spread during both the Great Recession and the Great Depression were negatively correlated. So how do you figure out something like that, and why do you think that was?
Right. So, there are two aspects of this. One has to do with what you can do. You can literally check the covariance metrics of the shocks hitting your system. So what it means is, like, if you look in the paper, at some point there are some parameter estimates, and I provide the estimates for the covariance metrics of the shocks. So I don't know how familiar you are with this, but the idea is when you have a univariate model, there is only one shock for one variable, no? When you have a multivariate model, like the one I have there, there are multiple shocks. And so you can ask what happens when one variable is hit by a shock, what happens to the other variables? So this is what, traditionally we think about as conditional commovement, in the sense there is one shock, what happens between the two variables of interest? then you can also track what happens over time to these variables. In the sense, it's possible that maybe they, initially the variables are, have a negative co-movement and then they get a positive co-movement. Now, the, I think the particular sentence you're referring to has more to do with some low frequency movements. I think what the figure that it speaks to what you were talking about is this figure number three, in which you see that during the Great Recession, there would, sorry, the Great Depression, there would be this negative area, sorry, this gray area at the beginning of the sample. You see that the price earning ratio goes down. So that means that the stock market is crashing. And then at the same time, the, this variable called the value spread moves in the opposite direction. So what that means is that growth stocks are outperforming value stocks, okay? So the, in this case, you can literally eyeball the figure and see that there is a negative co-movement. So in a sense, you don't even need any particular sophisticated statistical analysis. Of course, you could also ask the data literally to, sorry, the parameter estimate literally to tell you what kind of co-movement arises as a result of regime changes. But in this case, it's very simple. You just, you know, plot a simulation. You simulate how the data look like in response to one particular event. And in this case, is entering the Great Depression regime. And then you, you observe how these variables co-move. Okay? So, so long story short, when I talk about, oh, there's a negative co-movement, a positive co-movement, in some cases you want to, you know, you just use a statistical evidence. In some cases, so evident that it's, you don't even need to compute the covariance metrics of the variables. You just look at them and you simulate them. Okay, and so the point of the paper was to argue, and that's the panel B in that figure number three, that during the early phase of the Great Recession, this pattern was also in place. So during the early phase of the Great Depression, of the Great Recession, so essentially until early 2009, you have the price-earning ratio crashing, mm-hmm. and then you have the value spread increasing.
Okay.
The point of the paper is to say that during this early phase, it looked as if the U.S. economy was on the same path that it was during the Great Depression. Okay. And then the question is like, what action? And then, you know, I show that instead things started changing, and I try to argue why they started changing. What is the reason behind that change?
And you mentioned policy intervention as one of these reasons. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I think, so as you probably know, the chairman during the Great Recession was Ben Bernanke. That is one of the most famous scholars when it comes to the Great Depression. Of course, now it's way more famous for being the ex-Fed chairman, but it was even before becoming the Fed chairman, it was a very successful academic. And most of his interesting work was on the Great Depression. And then, of course, from there, I started studying the role of the financial sector for macroeconomic fluctuations. So what that means is that he was really prepared. In a sense, had been preparing his whole life for what to do in case of a financial crisis. And his idea, that I think turned out to be correct, is that during a financial crisis, the priority is to avoid a complete meltdown of the financial sector. So if you want, in a nutshell, what I think, what also other people think is different between the Great Depression and the Great Recession, is that given an initial shock for which in both cases you had a crash in asset valuation, during the Great Recession, there was a very strong intervention to prevent a full meltdown of the financial sector. So the idea is that you can think about the financial sector as something that sits in the middle of the economy, of the macroeconomy. Everybody that wants to do business has to go through it. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what, how we feel about banks in terms of profits that they make or, everybody can have different opinions about how fair society is. But in terms of the importance for the well-functioning of the macroeconomy, there is no doubt that the financial sector is key. In other words, once you are in a financial crisis, even if it can be, of course, very upsetting to think that banks get bailout, you might think that they would deserve to go down because of the way they behave before the financial crisis. Once you are in a financial crisis, it's like you're shooting yourself in a foot if you let them go down. So everybody suffers in the end, you know? So you might have heard this story, Main Street, Wall Street, and so on. So the problem is, like, once you're in a financial crisis, it's not a matter of one bank going down. If banks start going down, they all go down. At that point, Main Street suffers even more than Wall Street, okay? And so there's always a little bit of a difference between should a bank be allowed to default? Well, I think in principle, yes. If this happens during regular times, suppose a bank is poorly managed and it goes under during regular times, then you might think that that's okay. If this happens during a financial crisis, there can be a domino effect for which once one goes down, then they all go down. And in fact, Lehman was probably the moment in which people really started panicking that the whole system might collapse, no? So going back to your question, I think the main difference is the role of policy intervention. So during the Great Recession, I think there was a very forceful policy intervention to prevent the meltdown.
And so do you think that if there had been people like Ben Bernanke or anyone like that during the time of the Great Depression, it wouldn't have been so severe?
Yes, I think it's a fair characterization of reality. Of course, it's easier with the benefit of hindsight. Now, you might think that Bernanke had the advantage of seeing what happened during the Great Depression, no? So, but I think, yes, I think many policies that were implemented during the Great Depression, both on the monetary side, but also on the fiscal side, turned out to exposed to be poorly successful in, or not successful at all in preventing the crisis. In fact, some people would argue that some of the policies were implemented exacerbated the crisis. And in particular, I think that, again, at the cost of simplifying things, the main difference is that during the Great Depression, there was no, the central bank, the Federal Reserve didn't really provide the necessary liquidity to the system, while during the Great Recession, there was a big inflow of liquidity to prevent the meltdown.
Right.
And so, yes, I think that with the benefit of hindsight, probably a chairman like Bernanke would have done better during the Great Depression. Okay. So one caveat is that it's always hard to make these comparisons between two events that are 100 years apart.
Totally.
But, you know, again, as a rule of thumb, I think that's probably the case.
So I've also been doing some work myself investigating
why the Great Depression kind of molded this new era worldwide and why the Great Recession didn't as much. And I think the simple answer for that is that the Great Depression was a lot more severe than the recession. So of course it was gonna produce a lot more change, but I think the little variables within both definitely show that there were different factors as well.
Right, yes. And again, and I think part of it is really like, has really to do with the policy response in the sense that the reason why the Great Depression was more severe is probably also because the policy interventions were not there. On the other hand, I would think that let's put it this way, the consequences of the Great Recession, I feel like they are still unfolding.
Right.
So I wish we could just close that chapter. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the political events occurred around the world, in the US, but also in other countries. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the political system and so on. And this generally happens when things do not go well. So I hope that we can quickly go back to a more normal, more cooperative society. But right now, I feel like we still suffer the consequences. And of course, COVID didn't really help in making things better, but that goes without saying.
Yeah, totally. Another question that I have, kind of going back to what you were talking about, like bailouts and how if people had, like how the fact that people think that the banks don't deserve to be bailed out would have just made things worse. Do you think, like, was that idea so stigmatized during the 1930s? Do you know anything about that?
That's a good question. I feel like this has been around forever. I mean, if you think about what happened after the Great Depression, now with all fascist movements, and I mean, of course, the U.S. was spared at least that part. But the characterization of a certain group of people being fed pigs, exploiting the rest of society has always been there, no? And again, the question is not, I mean, of course, that characterization is offensive, period. But we could also agree that, oh, maybe these certain groups get bankers. We could agree, you know, in principle, bankers get too much and too big of a share of society's profits. It's an opinion, okay? I'm not saying it's my opinion, but let's say that that's an opinion. The question is, first, what do you do about that? You know, in the sense, you know, there are the distributive policies that you can implement and so on. So in other words, there are ways to solve this without necessarily characterizing people like pigs.
Right.
The second thing is, and it's, I think this is a key concept in economics. So this is something might be interesting for your project. In economics, there is a lot of, it's well understood that once the crisis occurs, there's not much you can do. In a sense, policymakers do not really have much of a choice. And in fact, even normal people don't have much of a choice because without the financial sector, they are going to suffer too. So this is what is called moral hazard, not in economics. The idea that bankers, again, I'm simplifying things a little bit. I hope you understand that I'm not blaming anybody here. But because of simplifying a little bit, if you are a banker, you anticipate that if things really go south, the government is there to intervene. So in a sense, you don't do anything really to prevent the very bad outcomes to occur. Another way to say this is that you take too much risk. You know that if things go well, if you go home with a good paycheck, if things go south, the government has to step in to prevent a complete meltdown. So this brings us, okay, what is the generally the solution to this in economics? Well, we think about what we call macroprudential policies. So policies that ex ante are there to restrain the behavior of the financial sector in a way that they don't take too much risk, okay? So this sounds all very simple. Why don't we just do that? Well, because of course there is the other side of the argument. There are some opponents of this idea that say, once you restrain the financial sector, you are assuming that the government has a very good understanding of what is risky and what is not risky and so on. And so you might lose efficiency in the sense that the banks might end up making less loans than what is efficient. So in principle, from a theoretical point of view, it's very clear what to do. There is an efficient number of loans that we should make in every period. It is an efficient amount of risk the banks should take. And then if things go south, we all pay for that in a sense because there was no moral hazard ex ante, you know? It's just that from a theoretical point of view, we know very well how this works. It's just that in real life, it's very hard to understand are banks really taking too much risk? So you know that after the Great Recession, a lot of regulation was imposed now through Dodd-Frank. Many banks complain that that implies a loss of efficiency because they cannot make the same amount of investments that they could make before. But then they also complain, and I think that's interesting, there are a huge amount of costs involved with this regulation that you have to basically spend a lot of money just to comply with all this regulation. Okay, but that's a little bit the trade-off that we faced when we think about these issues.
Right. And given all that you just said, do you think that even though there's I guess you could say new knowledge, or you know how people generally tend to learn from their mistakes, do you think that regardless of the pandemic and all of that, do you think that if there were to be another stock market crash or another crisis, it could get as bad as the Great Depression would? Or do you think because of what you just said and because of the policy intervention and all that, do you think that it would be caught quicker?
I think that, again, based on the recent experience, I think it is the case that we have a better understanding of what to do in these cases. The only problem is that we saw also here with COVID. Every time, so when there are these rare events, no, they tend to be all different from each other. So, the source of the shock is different, the structure of the economy is different, and so the way the shock propagates is different. And so to be honest, it's really, I think it would be too optimistic to think that we are immune from a decade of slow growth like during the Great Depression. And again, some people would argue that making the right proportions, the Great Recession also implied a very prolonged stagnation. I mean, if you look at episodes like Japan recently, that the recently means in the past 2-3 decades, in the 90s, you were not even born then, in the 90s there was this argument, in the late 80s, there was this argument that Japan was going to take over the US, no? Yeah. I remember I was a kid when this was happening. And so Japan really looked like a real contender against the US. And then a housing market crash occurred there, and then Japan entered a period of basically 3 decades of stagnation, no? So that was not as dramatic as the Great Depression. There are reasons to believe that there were other forces apart from the initial crash that contributed to the stagnation. But I think it's hard to completely write off the possibility of a second depression.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
No, of course, it was my pleasure. Okay, bye. Bye-bye, you too. Bye-bye.